between the two. Whether if I'm accelerating, yes, I'm going to make a measurement. But if I've got a fixed velocity of angular rotation on that carousel with these two spacecraft, I don't think I'm going to see a Doppler. Over to you for a comment on that, Roy, and then pass it over to BDH. You got it, Roy.
Well, what you're saying makes some sense. You know, and I hate to throw Wikipedia at you, but I am quickly trying to read a lot of stuff simultaneously, and they keep talking about angular velocities. So I keep on getting the idea that Einstein wrote even a little paper explaining why Sagnac and the boys were kind of getting it wrong, because they kept on saying it's ether, and he kept on saying, no, it's special relativity. But I will do some further reading. What can I tell you?
Mr. VDH, you've got it. Wait for the beep.
Yeah, fine business. Calls WA2VDH. Yeah, I think the comment Paul had before hit it right on the head. If you think about it, if you imagine a square with mirrors at each of the corners at 45 degrees, and that makes the reflection points, that while the light is propagating from one mirror to the next, the mirror that it's going to reflect off has shifted a small amount, and that shift is what causes the shift in the interference pattern. The velocity of light, of course, cannot change. That's independent of the velocity of the source or the observer. But while it's propagating from one measuring point to the next, the mirror has made a slight shift in position due to its rotation. Go ahead.
We're hearing a very weak signal that sounded like ORH or something like that. Want to try again?
This is 2ORE. I'm listening. I have a comment later. I'm going to try and get a better signal for you guys.
Okay, the end of that transmission was pretty good, Mr. Blank 2ORE. Go ahead and ask your question. And give us the full call and name.
Kilo 2, Oscar Romeo Echo. I've been listening for a while. I'm just wondering if, in order for those mirrors to actually receive the light that they're expecting, wouldn't the sending mirror have to, as stated before in the carousel with the baseball, have to be shifted a little bit to account for the movement that come from a spinning anything?
You got it, Roy.
Well, my understanding is the entire thing is self-contained with the entire device. You can't rotate a piece of the device and have it work. So everything from the beam splitter to the mirrors and the detectors all have to be contained within a single object that is either rotating or not rotating.
The signal going clockwise and the signal going counterclockwise on this rotating table, where all the mirrors are fixed in position, the distance between the transmitters and receivers are all fixed. We seem to be saying that the circumferential velocity, something going around the perimeter of a circle, is a kind of velocity that has magic, whereas linear velocity of two spacecraft at a fixed distance between the two, going very fast in space, there is no Doppler. So linear velocity, no Doppler. Circumferential velocity, all of a sudden is Doppler. That seems a little bit strange. Over to you, Roy, to explain that one. How can special relativity make circumferential velocity behave different than linear velocity?
Because in the case of the ring interferometer, half of your light beam is going clockwise and the other half is going counterclockwise, which is not exactly what's going on. The two rocket ships are in frame of reference zero velocity from each other and not changing position at all, whereas you have two light propagations going in complete opposite directions as you then introduce an angular rotation to the device.
If I'm doing nothing but, let's assume now that one spacecraft on this carousel is at 12 o'clock, one spacecraft is at 3 o'clock, and I'm aiming a beam from the 12 o'clock to the 3 o'clock, and I'm, that's the red beam, and I'm aiming a blue beam from 3 o'clock back to 12 o'clock. The distance between the two is staying fixed. At first, I make a measurement before anything moves. I get zero Doppler. Now I start rotating that carousel. The distance between the two is not changing, but you're telling me now as I rotate the carousel, the red beam and the blue beam are going to show a differential Doppler, is what you're telling me, even though the distance between the two is not changing. There's something magic about circumferential velocity that's different than linear velocity. So all kinds of velocity are not the same, is what you're saying, Roy. AC2GH, K2LIW.
You're either amplifying or actually decreasing the signal, KD2FIU.
WS2N.
That amplifying the signal going from tail to nose on an airplane with sound, amplifying and losing, is because the sound had to go through the medium, and the transmitter and receiver are now moving with reference to the medium. The laser beams do not require a medium. Therefore, the velocity between the two is not changing. AC2GS, K2RIW, go ahead, Roy.
But once again, I'm not quite sure if your two rocket ships are really the same. You can't do a transformation, at least not in my mind, where you can transform two guys in two rocket ships with zero velocity difference and then rotate them and be the same as a ring optical device that's going around in a circle. Because it's, no matter what you do, the two guys are always at right angles the way you've designed it, and they're not going to change their angle. So they're not going around in circles, per se. It's, you know, the light is not going around in circles. The light is going straight from one to the other. It might change in outside space, but in the frame of reference of those two ships, it's the same thing.
I see your objection, and let me show you how I'm going to change it now. Stand by. Instead of putting one rocket ship at the 12 o'clock and one rocket ship at 3 o'clock on this great big carousel, I'm going to put both rocket ships at 12 o'clock. And now I'm going to have 45-degree mirrors. I'm going to have a mirror at 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock. So one rocket ship is sending the clockwise beam to the 3 o'clock mirror, then the 6 o'clock mirror, then the 9 o'clock mirror, and back to be measured. The other rocket ship is going to send the signal from 12 o'clock to the 9 o'clock mirror, to the 6 o'clock mirror, to the 3 o'clock mirror, and back. So I haven't changed the distance between the two. I've gone from a quarter of a rotation to a full rotation by adding some mirrors. And now I rotate that plane. You're telling me that now, for all of a sudden, because I've gone all the way around, the clockwise signal is going to have a different Doppler from the counterclockwise signal. So I go all the way around, I get a Doppler. If I only go a quarter of the way around, I don't get a Doppler. That's strange. AC2GS, K2LAW.
WS2N.
I can't fully kind of imagine what you just said, but I think there's a difference between a quarter of a way is not a full path for a photon. It's still going in a straight line. If you're reflecting it back and around, then it's going around in 360 degrees. If you simply take two objects and rotate those two objects 360 degrees, it's not quite the same as the ring interferometer, because the ring interferometer is not being kind of rotated around an axis. It's actually traveling around the circumference of that axis it's rotating through. And I don't know exactly what to tell you. I mean, I'll just pull out one phrase. It says in this Wikipedia thing, a passive ring interferometer, the fringe displacement is proportional to the first derivative of angular position. So the derivative of angular position is angular velocity. Angular acceleration would be the second derivative of angular position. So I wish I could kind of give you a great visual over a radio of special relativity having this wonky effect when you try and speed up photons in one direction versus the other. I really wish I could.
You've got a ball.
When I read it, I read a couple of articles on it over time.
And what I remembered one article had was, suppose you had the one photon leaving the transmitter. It's called, you know, that's where the splitter is. That's going one way, and then the other photon is going the other way. Just one little photon. You get about, you know, a constant stream of light. Now, now this table is already spinning. It's already, I mean, it didn't just start up. It's already spinning. It's spinning, you know, a couple of revolutions a minute. And as this thing is spinning, this one photon goes to the left and the other one goes to the right. One's heading toward the 9 o'clock and the other one's heading toward 3 o'clock. As they leave at the exact same time. But as time goes by, this tape is now rotating a few degrees. Now that mirror that it was going to hit at 9 o'clock is now a further distance away. Then when that first photon left, the other mirror that was at 3 o'clock is now closer to you, so that one photon that's heading that way is going to take less time to hit that mirror, and that's how the whole setup starts. And then, you know, from there it goes, you know, it bounces over to 12 o'clock, you know, and that's the way they explained it in one article. Thinking of it like that, just about a stream of light or fiber optics or anything like that. But, you know, that came later. Back to you, Dick.
VDH with a comment?
I have a comment. ORE. It sounds like what may be missing is...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The signal is not accelerating or traveling with the sender anymore, and so it can only go in, let's say, especially on a laser beam, it's only going to go in one direction. And as it's moving and the receiver is moving, it's, you know, the target has to meet the receiver, same as in football. If the receiver keeps moving from where the quarterback wants to hit him, then he's not going to get hit. He's got to stop where the ball is going to receive, or at least have his arms open when the ball is going to hit him.
Also, when that thing is moving, the speed of light doesn't change, you know, because that's, you know, from where it's being transmitted. You know, that's the relativity coming in.
The bottom line of all this seems to say that circumferential velocity behaves differently in this environment than linear velocity. I could be moving two objects, transmitter and receiver, in a linear manner. I'm not going to get a Doppler if there's no change in the distance between the transmitter and the receiver. But when I set transmitter and receiver up into this ring setup, even though the distance, the total clockwise distance and the total counterclockwise distance did not change, but now circumferential velocity, because these objects are on this round carousel, the signal going clockwise behaves differently than the signal going counterclockwise. So there's something different about circumferential velocity versus linear velocity. That seems to be what we're saying here, Roy. AC2GS, K2LAW.
AC2GS. I think one of the problems is that we're saying that a positive and a negative angular velocity is the same angular velocity, which it isn't. That's where the two rocket ships being in the same velocity relative to each other kind of confuses the issue. We're talking about a situation where those photons possess the exact opposite angular momentum, not identical ones.
If the photons from the transmitter and receiver were going around this ring by hitting a series of mirrors, and the mirrors direct the signal around in a ring, and the majority of the signal is progressing through vacuum, so to speak, and hitting mirrors to just redirect it to keep it in this ring, that's one way of setting it up. Another way of setting it up is not using mirrors to direct the signal around the circle, but using a piece of fiber optics. The fiber optics is fixed in length between transmitter and receiver on the clockwise path, and the fiber optics for the counterclockwise path is fixed in length. The fiber optics is now the medium. The medium is moving, but the medium is not changing in length. And yet there's still a differential Doppler. You can see how it seems to be a little bit spooky. Over to you, Roy, KGRIW.
You working in your repeater, Eric?
I could see where it's spooky, but I don't know quite how to say anything otherwise. The direction of the photons is very important when you start to rotate them. If you start to rotate them and there's two sets of photons going in the opposite direction, they have a different effect and demonstrate an interference pattern accordingly. If you don't move them, then they have a steady interference pattern. And in my mind, it's the fact that you have an opposite angular velocity going on in both, in the same exact same medium. And when you start to spin it, that's where the fun begins.
Let me go one step further here on this one, Eric. I mean, Roy. I have a certain length of fiber in the clockwise path. It has a certain amount of delay time for the signal to go through that length of fiber. I have an identical length of fiber in the counterclockwise path. I have a certain length of delay time for the signal to go through the counterclockwise path. You're telling me that when I rotate this carousel with these circles of fiber, that the delay time of the signal going through the clockwise fiber and the delay time of the signal going through the counterclockwise fiber, those two delay times going through the same length of fiber changes because the whole platform is rotating. So somehow, electronically, the fiber in the clockwise case becomes longer, and the fiber in the counterclockwise case acts like it's shorter, less delay time, simply because the whole platform is rotating. You can see how that's a little bit spooky. Over to you, Roy.
It's about amplification and attenuation.
What can I tell you?
Welcome
there's a lot
to
about relativity, there's a lot about quantum
system.
Mechanics.
I
appreciate that it doesn't sound right. I'm just telling you, unfortunately, that's what happened. I can understand why you're having problems, and I wish I had put more time and effort into thinking about it so that I could describe something on a radio that would make that more sense than what I'm saying. But if you have a light that's traveling even through a medium and you rotate it, then theoretically, if it wasn't for relativity, it would speed up. But there's relativity that gets in the way, and that's what tends to cause everything to go strange with the interference pattern. But I could understand why that sounds like a confusing description of anything.
Yeah, let me help you a little bit here, Roy. Stand by.
Depends on amplification and attenuation.
I think it's because it's red and not blue. You keep saying the word amplification all night. And in your mind, that's saying something. It's not conveying anything to us, George, I'm sorry to say. Roy, I've made the leap of faith. I know that the ring interferometer, a gyroscope, I know it's a reality, I know it works. I'm just trying to understand the individual details as to how it works. And we're all discussing that, and we're trying to understand it. And it looks like there's something fancy with relativistic velocities that behaves differently on circumferential velocity versus linear velocity. Linear velocity is not going to do it. Linear acceleration would do it, but linear velocity doesn't do it. But circumferential velocity does. Let me drop. I just heard, just suddenly heard something I just said. Let me drop. An object that's in a circumferential velocity is continuously being accelerated toward the center of the pivot. That's why we sense centrifugal force. Something in circular motion is not just a circular velocity. It is continuously being accelerated. That satellite going around the Earth is sensing gravity of the Earth. It is continuously being accelerated toward the center of the Earth. That's why it falls around the Earth, so to speak. So something in circular motion is being accelerated. It's that centrifugal acceleration, that's what's doing it. I think we may have hit it, Roy. AC2GS, K2LAW.
Okay, I'll grab at anything, but I don't exactly know if that's a universal concept. Because basically, if I were to take a top and spin it in open space with no gravitational field, that top will spin forever. Nothing's really having forces acting upon it. It's a symmetry, it's a conservation of angular momentum going on.
Absolutely not. Stand by. If I had some loosely connected particles on the perimeter of that top, they would break away and fly into space. Individual portions of that top is experiencing a tremendous amount of acceleration toward the axis of rotation, toward the center of the top. Because the top is a solid, fixed object, you don't see the acceleration. If you squeeze yourself down to the size of an ant and you mount yourself on the perimeter of that top while it's spinning in free space, you're going to experience a tremendous amount of acceleration, Roy. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, I mean, I think we're kind of arguing at two sides of the same thing. I'm looking at it as a symmetry that's conserved, so that, I mean, that's why neutron stars spin so quickly. It's because the angular momentum of an entire star collapsing into itself squishes it down into a little nub, and it's spinning 1,000 times a second. And then you're seeing it as a gravitational acceleration phenomena. So I think we're seeing the same thing, we're just describing it differently.
Let's go back to 1913. Stand by. In 1913, they knew the circumferential velocity of a person standing at the equator of the Earth due to Earth's rotation. They knew the circumferential velocity of the Earth going around the Sun. So those two circumferential velocities, through what they thought was an ether, gave them a calculated amount of Doppler that was a great big number. I'm guessing the amount of Doppler they measured was many orders of magnitude slower, because the only real Doppler was the acceleration toward the center of the Earth created by the rotation, gravity, and whatever. In other words, when you're on the equator of the Earth, because the Earth is rotating once every 24 hours, you are experiencing an acceleration toward the center of the Earth. If gravity wasn't simultaneously pulling on you, you would fly off into space at a direction that's tangential to the equator. So I am guessing in 1913, if they had enough resolution, they saw an extremely small amount of Doppler, because it was only the centrifugal acceleration toward the center of the Earth was the only Doppler they could have seen, because it didn't depend on the ether and the movement through the medium. AC2GS, K2LAW, is that possibly close to what happened?
Yes, that could have been what they picked up. I mean, you know, they had a party because they thought they had proved ether, but I don't exactly know the details of the experiment, where they did it, and what they actually measured, but they thought they had ether.
Yeah, you've got 1,000 miles an hour of velocity because you're on the equator and the Earth is rotating. And you've got 19 miles a second of velocity because the Earth is moving around the Sun. So there's great big numbers that should have given them a big Doppler. And I bet you they saw a very small Doppler if they had enough resolution to resolve it. Anybody have any further questions or comments on all of the above? Maybe we're slowly arriving at a truth here. Maybe we're going off in a tangent. K2LAW and AC2GS and WS2N, we're all listening.
WA2FEB.
FEB, start off with your name and go right ahead with your comment.
It's WA2FEB. Name is Bill. I think the situation here is that the light is traveling faster. The distance is
are shorter when you're accelerating towards the detector, and longer as you accelerate or slow down going the opposite direction. I guess I have to drop this over. Okay. When I have some reference on the internet here. When the laser gyro is rotated about an axis perpendicular to the lasing plane, a frequency difference between the two laser beams results. The frequency difference is created because the speed of light is constant. One laser beam thus will have a greater apparent distance to travel than the other laser beam. So it's the distance. Over.
Attenuation.
If the laser beam is for traveling through a piece of fiber optics, Bill, and the fiber optics is not changing in length, and you got a clockwise fiber optics and a counterclockwise fiber optics, and the fiber and the emitting laser and the detecting laser are all on this platform and they're all rotating, you're telling me that the signal going through the clockwise fiber travels slower or faster than the signal going through the counterclockwise fiber. That's what you're saying, Bill. You might be right, but you can see why we haven't changed the length of the fiber, therefore the delay time of the fiber shouldn't change. Over to you for amplification on that, Bill.
Okay. No, the distance changes because I would guess in the photon example, as it leaves, it's accelerating or rotating, therefore it gets to the detector sooner than the counterclockwise one, which gets to the detector later. But according to this, it's the distance to travel.
So you're telling me that the clockwise length of fiber acts longer than the counterclockwise length of fiber simply because the platform is rotating. The apparent length and delay time of the fiber changes. The fiber is the medium. The medium is moving with the transmitter. The medium is moving with the detector. There's no differential length changing between detector and transmitter through that fiber. So you're telling me that the delay time of the clockwise fiber changes compared to the delay time of the counterclockwise fiber.
Repeater, timeout.
Simply because the whole platform is rotating. Back to you on that one, Bill.
Hit something.
Apparent distance to travel than the other laser beam in completing one pass around the cavity. So according to this, it's the distance to travel, not the speed. Over.
Then one fiber is starting to act longer than the other because of the rotation. That's a good trick. So that you're electronically stretching the fiber, even though physically, with your ruler, you could be on that platform, walking along that fiber, measuring it with your ruler. There's no physical length of change. But electronically, the fiber has become longer in delay time and the other one shorter. AC2GS, K2IW, what did you just discover, Roy?
No, the gentleman jogged away of me trying to explain this. Space and time are relative. That's the whole idea of relativity. So what you and I think of as time and what you and I think of as length and other dimensions is relative to us, not to the light traveling in both directions. Relative to the light traveling in both directions, the path is longer in one direction when it's rotated than the path of the photons going in the opposite direction. And for them, the relative difference in length produces the interference pattern. It's not us seeing a length, it's the photon seeing an extra length.
Okay, there is an experiment along these lines. I've got this fairly large diameter spacecraft. It's moving forward at half the speed of light. I'm now going to shine my flashlight across the spacecraft at right angles. You and I are inside the spacecraft. Top view, we're standing on the bottom round plate of the spacecraft, so to speak. You're at the 12 o'clock position, I'm at the 6 o'clock position, top view. I'm shining my flashlight across the spacecraft at right angles to the velocity toward you. Will the beam of that spacecraft, will the beam of that flashlight change because the spacecraft is moving at a constant velocity at half the speed of light? Will I still get a light beam going across the spacecraft at right angles to the velocity? Will that light beam still be straight? Everybody says yes. AC2GS, K2RIW.
I would agree with them. In those two people's frame of reference, that's a straight line. In another person's frame of reference, it's all over the damn place. Someone else who has a relative velocity of zero is seeing these two rocket ships being stretched. They're much longer than the guys riding the rocket ship would recognize. Space and time change relative to frames of reference when you get near relativistic speeds.
Okay, now here's the next step. Make believe that the spacecraft was shot out of a rifle, which has rifling. The spacecraft is now rotating very rapidly. I'm again shining that flashlight across the spacecraft from me toward you while the spacecraft is rapidly rotating around its long axis. So the flashlight is moving circumferentially and you, the receiver, are moving circumferentially. So now with the rapidly rotating spacecraft, does the flashlight beam still go straight from me to you, AC2GS, K2LIW?
Turns on what's bending it.
Well, will it bend to you? No, it'll simply poke you once during the rotation. It's not going to have its own angular momentum, I guess, if that's the question that you're asking.
I first started the experiment with the spacecraft not rotating. I shine the flashlight directly from one side of the spacecraft to the other side where you are, and you're seeing a straight beam of flashlight. Now we start using the reaction control jets on the outside, and we start rotating the spacecraft. I eventually bring the rotation of the spacecraft up to a very high...
Repeater, time out.
Remember now, when you're inside of a spacecraft, if there's acceleration going on, you can feel it. If there's steady state velocity, you cannot feel it. Well, in this case of rotation, you're now going to sense some centrifugal force, but I now speed up the rotation of the spacecraft by way of the reaction control jets on the outside. Will the flashlight beam do anything different than when the spacecraft was not rotating? Will it still be a straight flashlight beam? AC2GS, K2LAW.
WA2FEB.
Assume it will continue to be a straight beam where the focus shifts 360 degrees.
Whoa. If the focus is shifting, and it didn't shift before rotation, and it does shift after rotation, you're telling me the rotation changes the beam? The beam is now curved? Is that what you're saying, Roy?
We have to define our reference frame very, very strategically. If your reference frame is the rotating rocket ship, then the light is going at a straight line. Everything outside is going around them, but they're going in a straight line. The other rocket ship that isn't spinning sees them as spinning and sees the light shining like a lighthouse going 360 degrees.
You and I are inside the spacecraft. We're observing a flashlight beam. Will we see a difference in the action of the flashlight beam across from the left side to the right side of the spacecraft when it is spinning versus not spinning? We're not making any measurements outside. We're all inside the spacecraft. Will you and I sense any difference because the spacecraft is rotating? That's the question, Roy.
I would assume not.
I think I agree with you. I think it was WA2FUB. Was it Whiskey Alpha 2 or was it Bravo FUB? Go right ahead, sir.
WA2FEB, Foxtrot Echo Bravo. Bill, the beams are combined by optical frequencies to produce a beat frequency. This takes the form of a fringe interference pattern. The beat frequency of the light is analogous to different audio frequencies which combine to produce a third different frequency over.
Okay, so what you're saying, Bill, in this ring interferometer gyroscope, which is made with fiber, and I've got one fiber spinning that's rotated, that's wound clockwise, and I've got another fiber that's round counterclockwise. Two separate transmitters, two separate receivers. And now that whole thing is going to be rotated mechanically. You're telling me the delay time of the fiber, the signal going through the clockwise fiber, and the signal going through the counterclockwise fiber, identical delay time, no Doppler shift between the two, before the whole thing rotates. Now I start rotating that whole structure. You're telling me the signal going through the clockwise fiber is now going to take longer to go through that same piece of fiber, which hasn't physically changed in length. That seems to be what you're telling me, Bill. WA2FEB, K2RIW.
Well, I'm only telling you what I'm reading here, but in my view, it's that if you're rotating clockwise, the photon going out in the clockwise.
It's about time the machine come back on the air. Okay, I think Bill was the last person who made a comment 3 minutes ago before the repeater failed. And he's saying there is a difference in the apparent length of the clockwise fiber versus the counterclockwise fiber if the transmitters and receivers are fiber-fed. So by some magic, the physical length of the fiber that didn't physically change electronically changes because of the rotation. AC2GS, spooky action at a distance. K2RIW, go ahead, Roy.
AC2GS, we are all very happy and familiar with Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics suggests that there is an absolute frame of reference for the universe, that there's a frame of time and a frame of place. Unfortunately, relativity throws that completely out the window. There is no absolute simultaneous. Your idea of now is different than someone somewhere else's idea of now. Your idea of length, width, and the depth is different depending upon your frame of reference. As far as you looking at the ring interferometer, it hasn't changed its length. As far as the photons traveling in opposite directions, they have changed their effective length. It's not a pretty thing in some ways, but it seems to be what Albert has given us.
AE2KB with a comment.
Mr. Kilo Victor, go right ahead.
Kilo Echo 2 Kilo Bravo, KE2KB. Name is Frank. What you're saying totally defies the law of relativity because you're rotating this device as a single unit since it's connected with fiber, rather than if the photon was traveling through the air, that's when you would have the difference, but not with the fiber.
The machine is made with fiber, and it does detect rotation. Back to you on that one, Frank.
Oh, I was under the impression that this argument was theoretical. I didn't realize you were talking about a machine that actually is operating on the principle. I'm sorry, KE2KB.
WS2N.
Don't worry, Frank. We've been all a little bit confused here tonight, but one embodiment of this machine is done with fiber. There's a clockwise ring of fiber and a counterclockwise ring of fiber, and the two fibers change their apparent electrical length when rotation takes place. I know that the physical length of the fiber and the delay time should not change. However, because the whole thing is rotating, the signal flowing through that fiber senses an acceleration toward the center of rotation. Whenever you're on a spinning object and you're away from the axis, anything that's moving in a circular motion is being accelerated toward the center. Otherwise, you'd be moving in a straight line. I think it's the acceleration that's creating the effect, not the apparent delta velocity. WS2N, K2RIW, you've got a call. And I think we want to give you some time for the space report. You got a poll.
Yes, okay. So all I was going to say is the fiber optics is just like having a million mirrors. You know, one or two mirrors, and, you know, one at third base, one not yet. And, not, you know, one at first base, one at third base, and one at second base. Having that set up is, you know, you're only dealing with the three mirrors and the transmitter and the receiver. They're at home plate. You know, instead of having those just a couple of mirrors, picture a million mirrors going around that same location. And that's why the fiber optics, I believe, works. It's nothing but a lot of mirrors. You know, it's modern. You know, naturally, they've only come out with this. You know, they didn't have this in 1913. Back then.
If you built this machine by way of mirrors at first base, second base, third base, and home, and the signal is flowing through air or vacuum, you would see the effect. And then you flip over the fiber, you still see the effect. So in either case, there is an acceleration toward the center of rotation. I am guessing the acceleration is the real phenomenon. Obviously, we've gotten into something that's a little more complicated than we first thought, and there's still some mystery to it. And that's what makes it exciting. I think we should be flipping over pretty soon to the space report, Paul. Roy. I'm going to pass it back to you, Roy. And what kind of nice, simple subject in science and physics do you think you might be discussing next week? I'm having some fun with it. AC2GS, K2RW. Good stuff, Roy.
BA2FEB again.
Thank you, Dick. I just wanted to point out, by the way, that the one that uses fiber optics doesn't require two coils. It has a single coil and a beam splitter, and the light just goes into both ends and then gets read out again. But I still, unfortunately, think it's relativity, and even though through a medium it doesn't travel at the speed of light, there's a lot of argument about whether it's traveling through the medium or around the medium, but it still travels at close to relativistic speeds where relativity has that lengthening effect. But that's my two cents on that subject. I don't know what next week will bring. I have a whole bunch of little topics, and usually I let the field of science show me something really interesting, and I try and develop it for a talk like this. And I think we all had a fun time tonight.
Yes, we did. We're going to go over to Bill in a second. Stand by. I talked about a clockwise fiber and a counterclockwise fiber, just to be simple. Obviously, one fiber, when you feed one signal from one end to the other end clockwise, you feed another signal from the other end to the first end counterclockwise. So one piece of fiber can have both a clockwise and a counterclockwise signal going through it. Maybe at slightly different frequencies, slightly different laser wavelengths. So that doesn't change it. And I have the impression that whether the signal goes through a zillion mirrors in air or goes through the zillion mirrors in fiber, you still get the effect. WA2FEB, K2RW. Go ahead with your comment, Bill.
Okay, I just want to read one more thing here which may, help. When the laser gyro is at rest, the frequencies of the two opposite traveling laser beams are equal. When the laser gyro is rotated about an axis perpendicular to the lasing plane, a frequency difference between the two laser beams results. The frequency difference is created because the speed of light is constant. One laser beam will thus have a greater apparent distance to travel than the other laser beam, completing one pass around the cavity. Over.
What is this attenuated? What is amplified?
Somebody keeps shouting amplify, and it conveys no useful information. So please stop doing it. The signal going clockwise and counterclockwise through one single piece of fiber of fixed length. You're saying electronically is acting longer when...
You're talking for 45 minutes with the same words that I wish to know. Here, one is attenuated, one is amplified.
What's causing the attenuation? What's causing the amplification, George? By the way, I shouldn't have said what I said as strong as I did. Please don't shout. Normal voice. What's causing one to be amplified and one to be attenuated? George, do you have an answer for that question? Back to you, George. To B2FIU, K2RIW. Okay, maybe Roy will come, maybe George will come back later. WS2N, what is NASA doing this week? And are they doing something less controversial than a laser gyroscope? You got it, Paul, K2RIW. Oh, by the way, Paul, do a little bit of experimenting with aiming your beam a couple of degrees clockwise and a couple of degrees counterclockwise, and tell me what you're doing. Your signal is quite a bit noisier tonight, so I think the aiming of your beam is a little bit off of the direct path, so to speak.
Okay, well, we're just turn the beam one way or the other. Surprised it moved after all this cold weather. I just went a little further north of west. How's that?
You went a little bit north of west. That was no improvement. Try the other way, Paul.
Okay, I think this is about the best you're going to get. If I go any further, I'll wind up going too far. How's that thing?
No improvement. So go to what you think is better and continue. And are you running normal power tonight, sir, Paul?
Yeah, I'm 75 watts. What are you going to do? Might be conditions. Might be the repeater. But, I don't know. We'll have to work with this. How's this, Dick? I can't go through Selden. I don't hear that coming back to me.
Yeah, Selden seems to be off the air tonight. You are 85% signal, 15% noise. Very copyable. Just a little hiss in the background. So please continue. You've got a poll. And this is going to be a space report number 282 of the series. 5.5 years worth. You've got a poll.
Okay, very good. Yeah, well, it's been, 3 weeks worth of stuff, but I can't go through all of that. We'd be here for another net. So we'll just try a shortened version. Usually I do a year in review type of thing, but that would take too long. But there were around 85 launches worldwide during the year. And out of them, the United States led the group. We had 32% where Russia was 23 and China was 20%. I have all the different launches here, but I'm not going to go through them all. It was about the same launches as last year. So SpaceX really led the way for us. In fact, when you were opening remarks tonight, I was watching SpaceX take off from Launch Complex 40 down in Florida. They had a successful launch for the U.S. government, the Zoomer spacecraft, ZUMA, built by Northrop Grumman. So it was a top secret mission. We don't know where it's going. It took off at 8 o'clock tonight, and about 6.5 minutes later, I watched it land at our landing zone one, they call it. It's complex, used to be Launch Complex 13 that SpaceX has taken over down at Cape Canaveral. It was a successful launch, but that was pretty good. As you were talking, I was watching that. Let me drop it. Russia has launched quite a few rockets during the year, quite a few successful ones. So the last one that they launched, it was a Zenit rocket. It launched from Russia, and it had an Angola satellite on
on board, and it didn't make it to orbit, so that was a failure. China had a few failures during the year. We did okay. So India had less launches this year than last year. They're not part of the European Space Agency, so they have their own space program. So they only have 5 launches for the year. Just a couple extra spacecraft now at Mars. Last year, I gave a report of how many, you know, which spacecraft are orbiting Mars, and we'll do the same. Just as crowded as we've got here on Earth with thousands of spacecraft, we're starting to add them up at Mars. You know, we have the MAVEN spacecraft, that's NASA spacecraft, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, has been up there for almost 20 years now. That's still there, operating. Another operating one is the Mars Odyssey. Also, the MOM mission, that was the one from India. They call it the Mars Orbiter mission. That's successfully still orbiting and operating at Mars. European Space Agency now has 2, the Mars Express, and then they just sent one up this year called the Trace Gas Orbiter. So that's going around Mars. And every time they send a spacecraft up, now they have to think about the possibility of running into one. They have to keep track of all these, including the dead ones. There's still Mariner 9, the original one that went into orbit 50 years ago, and you have Viking 1 and Viking 2. We think of the Viking land, Viking missions as the ones that landed on Mars. They also had counterparts orbiting Viking spacecraft, which operated for quite a few years. And these spacecraft are all dead, but they have to watch out for them. Yeah, the Russian Phobos mission is still orbiting, these things NASA has to think about all the time. On the ground, you have only 2 operating robotic spacecraft on the surface of Mars. You have Opportunity, and you have Curiosity. There's been a series of different landings craft over the years, but they're not operating. You had one by the Russians, Mars 3, it lasted like 20 minutes and died. But you had Viking 1, Viking 2, the Pathfinder mission with Sojourner, you had the Phoenix mission,
and now we're... This is Echo 7, Lunar Tango Delta. VE7 LTD, testing 123. This is Victor Echo 7, Lima Tango Delta with an audio test. Audio test 123, VE7 LTD.
2020, you'll have another rover, the most curious 2020 rover. And China and Japan have future plans for rovers as well on Mars. So both planets are getting very crowded. Our planet with all our spacecraft, and now we're doing the same thing to Mars. Drop it. We have a new crew that just went up. I'm going to report that if we had a net, but it was Christmas the week before. One crew came down and another crew went up. So we're back up to six people on the International Space Station. So they're doing okay. Science-wise, plenty of science. Still hundreds of science experiments going on the space station. From day to day, from week to week. They finally proved out that the DNA that they sequenced and they're able to identify on the International Space Station has been confirmed and very successful. It's going to help them in the future by having, if they have a sick astronaut, you'll be able to check his DNA. You might go to a different moon or a planet and want to check a substance. You'll be able to check to see if there's DNA and, you know, a life form or that type of thing. But apparently that's not that easy to do, and yet they were very successful last year doing that. As you can see, I'm really ripping through the year. Might as well talk about what they're going to be doing this year. We have one SpaceX launch already tonight. That was the first one of the year. And then later on in the month, toward the end of the month, they're going to be launching the Falcon Heavy. Elon Musk has been trying to get this thing off the ground. 2013, he predicted it was going to be going up. Here we are, 5 years later, and he's finally able to do this. He's actually had it out at the pad. They took pictures of it, did some testing at the pad, brought the whole setup back into the hangar, and they're getting ready to for a test. Normally, they put a dummy weight in any new type of rocket system. This time, what he's going to do. And by the way, the Falcon Heavy is really nothing but three Falcon 9s boosters bolted together with a second stage on top. So for a payload, instead of just taking a cement block or some heavy thing and putting it on top, Elon Musk is taking one of his cars, a red Tesla Roadster, a regular car, and he's putting it in the bearing of this Falcon Heavy. And at the end of the month when he launches this, he's going to put it into a heliocentric orbit. So that thing's going to be put into an orbit around the sun forever. So, you know, as the human race fades out, the sun blows up into a red giant, Elon Musk's car will still be going around the sun. So I'm looking forward to that launch. If that's successful, he's got two other Falcon Heavy launches planned for the rest of the year. And the interesting thing about this is SpaceX has a goal of reducing the cost of space transportation, and he successfully has been bringing boosters back one after the other. In fact, the one that they brought back tonight would have been number 21 out of some 40-odd different launches that he's had since he started with the Falcon 9. When he launches the Falcon Heavy, all three boosters are going to be coming back. He's got two boosters that are going to land simultaneously at landing zone one. He's got two big X's, big concrete circles out at that launch complex. And plans on landing both at the same time back at Cape Canaveral. And then the Setta Core is going to be launched, plans on bringing that back to land on a drone, a big ship out at sea called, he's got a name for it. Of course, I Still Love You is the name of the ship. He's going to land it. He's done that many, many times. But he plans on saving all three cores. The idea of all of this is to bring the cost down. He thinks instead of, somebody spending $100 million for a launch, if he could recover all the cores and relaunch the same cores, he'll only be paying for fuel, which is, he started to get to that point. In fact, the two boosters that are attached to this triple setup, the two Falcon 9 boosters, one on the port side and one on the starboard side, are going to be two of them that have pre-flown during 2017. One of them was a booster that they used to bring cargo up on the ninth flight to the International Space Station, and another one was a commercial flight. Taking these two boosters, takes a brand new core booster, puts one on one side, one on the other, and plans on launching this by the end of January. I'm looking forward to that. I've seen some of the animations of what it would look like, the launch and then two boosters, making 180-degree turns, having both of them having a boost back burn to the Cape Canaveral, then a re-entry burn coming through the atmosphere, and then a final single burn with just one engine right before they land on land, and then have the third one land in the ocean. And then having the second stage continue on, you know, that's going to continue on with